Dave, if I told you, I was like, hey, here's this drug. It might get you high, or you might cut your leg off. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the next episode of Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally with Dave Crossland. Today, we're going to talk about triptorelin. We've also got a little information about something called kispeptin. We don't know about it, but we're gonna bring that up. We've got steroids in the news. Plus, we're going to talk about spice and some dude that sawed his leg off. Plus, soccer hooligans and a bunch more. All happening right here on Drugs and Stuff. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Our programming is brought to you by True Nutrition. Guys, if you're watching this on video, we also have audio podcasts available. Check out advicesradio.com or head over to Advices Radio on any of your favorite podcast apps. What's up, Dave Crossland? How you doing, man? I'm trying to keep it together here. I'm just getting better from being sick.
I think Scott may be having some sort of mental trauma in his life. You may notice his hair.
You're just figuring that out now? I've been dealing with mental trauma forever. Actually, for the last two years since I've been doing this podcast.
I don't really know what to say about that hair. I really don't. I'm seriously questioning our relationship at this point.
Oh, you called it a relationship before, though. I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah, well, in all terms of business sense, as in we are co-presenters on a podcast.
Yes.
I have no deeper feelings for you, though. I know that may disappoint you, and I don't want you to get too upset, Scott, and I am trying to let you down lightly, but I don't love you, mate.
Can we still be friends?
So you can stop sending me the messages and the begging letters and the nude pictures. It's just not going to happen, my friend.
I thought you liked the nude pictures, no?
No, not them ones. No, definitely not them ones.
Yeah. Can we still do the podcast together at least?
Yeah, we can do the podcast. Right, as long as you keep it professional.
All right, okay? All right. I'll do my best here. Go to drugs in the news. We've got a couple stories today. Number one, it looks like there was a big bust on the East Coast. Four people, it looks like that they're being charged. They were caught. Apparently it says it states that he received payments of more than $350,000in 2017 and 2018. It looks like what do we have here? I've got a couple articles open. They had a bunch of stuff on hand. Let's see if I can pull this open here. So they were caught with an estimated 143,000 steroid pills and 4,300 vials of steroids in liquid form. It says that they were importing large amounts of steroids, primarily from Hong Kong, for redistribution to customers across the U.S. They were using a couple, it looks like, steroid-type boards to do this. I would consider this big. Would you consider this? Would this be a big bust? Because it sounds like to me.
The difficulty is the volume of stock doesn't match with the volume of financial flow.
Yeah, you would think more than $350,000, right?
Yeah, you would. A lot more. I've seen levels of trading in that region with one-man operations.
Really?
And not carrying anywhere near that level of stock. Okay. That's, 143,000 tablets?
Yep. And 4,000.
So that's 143,000. So that's 14,300 tubs of gear.
Wow. Of just the orals?
No, 1,430 tubs of orals, sorry. But even that, nearly 1,500 tubs of orals is a huge amount of oral stock.
Okay.
So I suspect that the financials are probably a lot higher, and they've only found portion of the financial traded.
Okay.
Based on the stock levels, that's a big bust, definitely. I mean, if you think about it this way, let me do some quick maths.
You hear Dave's brain working right now. You can hear that his brain actually makes those sounds.
It does. That's £715,000 in fucking orals alone.
Yeah.
No, 71. Sorry, 71,500. I'm getting my zeros mixed up. So that's a huge amount of financial stock to be held in orals.
You said what was it in pounds?
Right, I'm going to use a calculator because my brain's not working.
While you're doing that, I'm going to hit play on this this news article I found here. Ooh, there's an ad. Okay. Of course there's an ad. A 12-second ad that I can't skip. I know, right? All right. Oh, it's for like a mattress. It looks like a very comfortable mattress, too. I should get a hold of these people and see if they want to sponsor us. All right, here's the news article from 10.
New on the night team, we're learning more tonight about a drug trafficking operation that stretched from Hong Kong to southern New England. It's a story we first told you about on Turn to 10 today.
Four people arrested, including a man from Providence. The night team's Danielle Kennedy live in Providence where she tried to speak to them.
And Dan and Patrice, only NBC 10 here today as those four people faced a judge in court.
We should have been there.
All of them accused of getting steroids from Hong Kong and then shipping them to people all across the United States. The alleged drug kingpin, 46-year-old David Esser, leaves a federal courthouse Wednesday. Our NBC 10 cameras, the only ones there to question him outside district court.
No comment.
You don't have anything to say about the charges against you?
No, I don't.
Esser is accused of leading a massive steroid trafficking sting out of North Attleboro, where investigators seized nearly 143,000 pills. Court papers say he arranged for large quantities of raw steroids to be shipped all over the U.S. from Hong Kong, then had individuals cook the raw product into liquid and send it to an alleged stash house he operated in North Attleboro. Records say he then paid people to process, package, and ship the steroids all over the U.S. Those people include Mason Nieves of Providence, James McLaughlin of North Attleboro, and his fiancée, Allison Shepard, who is also Esser's ex-wife. Anything to add?
No, you're my person.
Court documents allege Esser was well aware he was being investigated following a 2015 visit from FDA agents. He's accused of using a bodybuilding website called Brotherhood of Pain to advertise and sell steroids under the name The Gold Line. That's where an undercover federal agent allegedly bought steroids from Esser using cryptocurrency.
Yeah, so it sounds like they've been working on him for a while there.
Yeah, going back to what we were talking about, just short of 86,000 in orals.
86,000 pounds? Or is that dollars?
Yeah, I'd worked it in UK prices, so 86,000 pounds retail pricing.
What is that roughly in US dollars then?
100.
Okay. It's a lot of product.
What do you pay for 60 tabs of 50 meg of VAR?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know what you're talking about, Dave.
Allegedly, you should know roughly what the price is. I'm sure you've heard somebody reference it.
VAR? I don't know. That's for girls.
Okay, Oxy then.
$50.
Is that all?
50. For how many?
For 60, 50 meg.
50 to 100, 75 bucks maybe. Something like that.
That's quite cheap, actually. I thought you were going to be more expensive.
Huh? I'm just guessing anyway. I wouldn't. Anyway.
Okay.
I had another news story here. This is gruesome. So, Dave, I don't know what's up with this, but I've heard about this, and this is not steroid related. This is just, okay, so I did a program on Research Chems, and when I did this program on Research Chems, just basically research stuff in general, I found that, like, Research Chems go well beyond bodybuilding nowadays. There is all sorts of, like, nasty sounding drugs out there that are all related to, like, either amphetamines or sedatives, things like that, and that these drugs are all also under the Research Chem, you know, umbrella. So I was shocked by that, first of all, and second of all, there's a story of a guy in Russia who was on this drug called Spice. I think we've all heard of that now. I know very little about it. He cut his leg off.
Synthetic cannabis.
He cut his leg off on this stuff, Dave. What's up with that?
Well, synthetic cannabis is what Spice is, also known as Black Mamba and K2 and various other names. The ironic thing is, do you know why synthetic cannabis was invented?
Why?
So that researchers could work on the effects of cannabis on cells and people. Because they couldn't get the license to have actual cannabis, because cannabis is a controlled drug in the UK, so they couldn't get a license to have actual cannabis to do research on its effects. So what they did is they created a synthetic cannabis.
You're kidding.
That they could then use and circumvent the law in regards to actually having cannabis.
Oh, yeah. My God.
They call the guy who invented the original formula invented several different types.
Okay.
And obviously, when chemicals, research chemicals or anything like that, when this research is published, the chemical compounds are published.
Okay.
So it only took someone with a very basic understanding of chemistry to get those compounds, mix it together and create synthetic cannabis.
Ooh.
as a viable commercial drug. It doesn't really, in a lot of its forms, act like traditional cannabis. It is very strong. It is very quick to act, and you'll generally. I mean, the death toll from Spice is high.
Is it really?
You see a lot of deaths from Spice. There's an area, and I think it may be LA, I'm not sure, but it was an area where there was a lot of down and outs. So there was a lot of homeless people, a bit of a cardboard city. And a batch of Spice hit that one weekend that was particularly strong. And if I remember, I do tend to get things a little bit mixed up numbers-wise.
Yeah.
But remember, I think at the end of the weekend, they were looking at over 30 deaths.
Holy shit.
From Spice. Generally, unlike weed, where you will generally mellow out, chill out, get a bit spaced out, or whatever you want to call it, however you want to describe the effect, Spice can zombify you.
And that's what really they call it here.
Yeah,
they call it the zombie drug. They say this man in the city in Western Russia took this drug, the zombie drug, and then he proceeded to cut his own leg off, leaving behind a bloody stump. There's, I guess, pictures. We're not going to post them here of him laying in a gurney with a tourniquet wrapped around the bloody leg. Oh my God, Dave! Oh my God!
Huge,
terrifying, dude! Terrifying.
Huge, huge disassociation with yourself. Huge, you know, you're just not in contact with who you are or where you are or anything that's going on around you. You are completely and totally encapsulated in a different environment.
Dave, if I told you, I was like, hey, here's this drug. It might get you high or you might cut your leg off.
Well, I think the cut your leg off is a bit of an extreme, but it's not uncommon for people taking Spice to collapse.
Okay. Well, that's...
In fact, it's very common.
That could happen in regular weed or alcohol.
Yeah, but Spice is very, very big in the prisons in the UK, and it's they see it quite regularly where inmates will come out of their cells and then just collapse on the floor.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's still... But if I was like, hey, Dave, you might collapse if you take this drug. That is. I mean, this is the same thing. Somebody ate somebody's face, I believe. They were using Spice or bath salts or some shit. You know, it's...
I mean, you're playing with, you know, very sensitive areas of the brain that deal with our perception of things and how we interpret the information around us and how we perceive the world around us.
Phew.
I mean, just look at acid.
Yeah.
Acid has been around, God, no, what, 60 years, 70 years, acid now? And you know, when you speak to people that have taken acid, they have seen sofas come alive and eat people, and they have seen, you know, some of the strangest shit on the planet go on in front of them because it's so altered how they perceive reality. So, you know, chemical compounds that can have this impact on us have been around for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I think with acid, though, and I might, someone may correct me on this and I might be wrong, but I think acid is quite disabling in the fact that you sort of end up getting stuck in this visual experience of what you're seeing, but you don't really act upon it in the same way. Whereas spice seems to trigger these really weird psychological events, but you physically act on them as well.
Yeah.
But then that, there's been cases of people on acid thinking they can fly and jumping off houses and jumping off buildings and killing themselves.
True, absolutely.
You know, so I don't think as a drug goes, it's particularly doing anything that we've not seen before or just doing it stronger.
Good God.
That's very much the case across the board with everything, isn't it? You know, we normalize a certain compound, so then we start taking more. You know, steroid doses have gone up, recreational drug doses have gone up, pre-workouts have got stronger. We're always looking for the stronger fix.
Yeah.
So it's just a progression of what drug use is. You know, generally people are taking drugs for escapism or for stimulus, and after a while you adapt. That stimulus becomes normal. So you need something more, stronger.
So, Dave, with all the work you've done, you know, for anybody who isn't familiar, Dave does a lot of traveling around, talking to different military groups and organizations, harm reduction for not only steroid use, but also recreational drug use. Have you talked to anybody who's had experience? Anybody ever bring up spice to you? Is this something you've heard?
Yeah. I've got a presentation. In my presentation, I've got a video of a kid dying on spice.
No kidding.
No. He swallows his own tongue and chokes to death. But yeah, I have spoken to people that have had issues with spice, and I've also spoke to people that have had family members or friends that have had problems with spice. One of the big things that bothers me about spice is, one, its cost.
What is it, cheap or expensive?
Very cheap.
Is it really? Okay.
It's pocket money pricing, and I use that word deliberately because of where it's very often found.
What do you mean?
Spice is in schools. It's in our schools.
Okay, yeah.
And it's popular, one, because it's not, it doesn't stink like weed. Mm. You don't have the storage issues that smell like weed.
Yeah.
It's cheap, and it's generally regarded as being quite harmless.
Huh.
And so you've got, I mean, I know there was a kid at my daughter's school who got expelled for smoking spice at school.
No kidding. So you're saying that this is going to be almost like a little stealthier. It's not going to stink. You know what? That reminds me of vaping. And I sound like an old man. I'm like, the kids are vaping nowadays. There was a story locally here that there were so many kids throwing their disposable e-cigarettes down the toilet, that they were clogging up the toilets at this junior high or high school every day. Like, they were shutting down bathrooms every day because it's been such an epidemic of kids vaping now. Because you can get away with it. You know, you're not going to stink afterward. You're not going to smell like tobacco. You're not going to smell like weed after that.
Yeah, and it's similar with the spice stuff. You know, it's easy to hide. You don't have smell issues. You don't have smell issues when you're smoking it in the same way.
Yeah.
And it's cheap. You know, it's deliberately targeted at that market because it's cheap. You know, you can buy spice for as little as £5 or £10 at $5 or $10.
Huh. You know what you can't hide, though? You can't hide when you cut your leg off.
You can't. And you definitely can't hide the effects of being off your tits on spice. It's nasty stuff. It really is. And it's a shame it's as popular as it is.
Huh. Man.
I don't know if it's hit the States in the same way it's hit here, but we have a big spice culture over here.
Okay. Literally, I don't know. But, I mean, I've heard of issues. It's in the news once in a while. So I imagine if it's there, you know, I'm imagining it's in here.
Hey, guys. Why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
I'll switch gears though, because we did still have a bunch of bodybuilding stuff.
Yes.
Somebody had a question, Dave, about triptorelin. This is one that I don't think we've talked much about before. You know, we've talked a lot about PCT. We've talked about HCG and HMG. But I don't think we've talked a lot about triptorelin. And this was in our YouTube video, the latest one. Someone said, hey, can you guys talk about that for PCT? From what he understands, it's like a one-shot miracle drug pretty much.
It is, if it works. It's not guaranteed to work. It's used at doses of around 5 milligrams for chemical castration.
So don't do that.
No, don't take 5 milligrams. I actually know someone who did, and he did chemically castrate himself. His test level was 2.1 or something.
Wow.
He just thought, well, I've tried it, it's not worked, so I'll try a shitload more. Again, typical bodybuilding attitude towards drug taking, and unfortunately fucked himself up.
Wow.
But it all started based on a study. There was a study of an Italian guy who had used steroids recreationally for 10 years.
Okay.
And he was obviously fucked, shut down, wasn't recovering. And he took one dose of 200 micrograms of triptorelin and... Scott, oh, come on. At least turn away from the camera and voice shove shit up your nose.
Guys, for anybody on the audio, I'm just using nasal spray here because I'm sick.
I'm not doing a lot of coke.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Anyway, and...
Spice.
He recovered. He recovered. Huh. So, yeah, I've seen it used. I've used it myself with people that have failed to respond to PCTs.
Okay.
And generally, it's been a relatively decent success rate, but it is not going to fix all ills. It's definitely, don't think, you know, well, if all else fails, I can just take trip and I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
No, not at all. You know, it doesn't solve every miracle under there, but it is literally one shot. And it's not something I would recommend that you use regularly in PCT. In fact, they do say that really if you've used it once for recovery, you really don't want to be touching it again for another 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
Because of this potential that the fact it, you know, it doesn't take a lot before it starts becoming negative.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's important, one, that you know how much you're dosing and that your source is correct in what it's saying on the label. A lot of people say 100 micrograms. Personally, I the evidence I've seen all revolves around 200 micrograms as a single shot.
Okay.
Some people add tamoxifen and Novadex with it. From what I've read, it isn't necessary. But yeah, I've seen quite a lot of successes with running trep when it comes to recovery. But if you're forced to the point where you're having to use that, then you've got to be very realistic of the fact that if you then go on to cycle again, you're probably going to be in the same position.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, you know, don't think it's something you can constantly bail yourself out the shit of. And if you are continually having to use it, then you will get to the point where your recovery is absolutely fucked. Yeah. So, but for someone who's messed up or hadn't realized the consequences and his days are done and they want to get out of it and they want to try and recover some form of natural, then I found it to be quite useful, yeah.
All right. While we're taking these questions, I've got one here. This is kind of a topic. I talked to a guy just yesterday on Instagram and so many different things came up. I figured I'd just kind of talk about his situation anonymously here and see if we could give him some advice. Now, he said, hey, I'm looking at this website that turned out to be a source, basically. And he was talking, he wanted to, he said, you know, he's like, I'm taking TRT. He said, but I'm not feeling the things that guys talk about, you know, like when they're on they're on testosterone. He said, I'm not really feeling anything at all. And he was considering buying some stuff from this source. Now, he gave me some information. He said that he's currently prescribed 200 milligrams every 2 weeks of testosterone. I'm assuming it's a cypionate. He's here in the U.S. And he's just taking that all in one shot every 2 weeks. Now, my thought was... go ahead.
Sorry, go on. Well, I was just going to ask, yeah. Is his source of that TRT prescription?
I believe or is so. Yeah, because he's talking about he's doing that through the doctor. His test levels are only at like 450 nanograms. So it sounds like they're not that high. Later 40s guy. My thought was, first of all, Dave, it's just like if he got on the road of getting illegal supplements, he's going to end up in a situation where like now he's going to be roped to breaking the law, first of all, and he's not going to be able to, you know, my thought is what he's looking for is a long-term solution. This isn't a cycle. I've seen people who are like, hey, my test kind of sucks. Should I do a cycle? And it's like he's looking for a long-term solution, Dave. Well, what are some of the things, I guess, because there's so many things, everything from like the shot frequency to his total test levels. I mean, I think he could be feeling a lot better. It sounds like he could probably use a higher dose, right?
Well, the first thing I would want to know is what was his levels before he started taking TRT? Why did he start taking TRT? Second one would be when was the shot done in relationship to when the test was done?
Sure. Because if it was what, because 2 weeks?
If he's done the blood test just before his second shot, then his levels are about right.
Okay, yeah.
What he will be finding, though, is because he's doing on a two-week protocol, he'll find that he's peaking 48 hours in, and then he's declining from that point onwards. So changing to a more frequent injection protocol would allow for less of a drop-off towards the end.
Same amount of tests. You know, dosing, right? Just split it up more often.
Yeah, so just do 100 every week. Mm-hmm. And then what he really needs to do is he needs to test his levels 48 hours post injection and then just prior to next injection, and then he'll get his peak and his minimum levels, and then he has an idea of where he's actually sitting in range for the period of time that he's under the influence of that one injection.
Okay.
Also bear in mind that if that was his first injection that he's tested back off, his levels are going to increase as the carryover comes from the esters in the drug.
I would assume that's not it, just because he's working with a doctor,
So if that was his, you know, if the doctor's given him a shot and said, right, we're going to do the first test after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's his first test back, then his levels are going to be low, one, because of timing, and two, because he hasn't had the accumulative effect of the ester to build in his system over 4, 5, 6 weeks. If he's not feeling any different, it could well be that his test levels weren't that bad in the first place.
Oh.
At the end of the day, he's only taking TRT, so he's only replicating natural levels. He's not pushing any higher than that, and I don't feel particularly different on my TRT to I do if I forget to take my shots. I don't notice a drop-off. I can go quite a period of time before I really start to see anything negative.
Yeah. See, well, here's my thought, though. You should feel good on TRT. You know, you should be feeling optimal, right? That would be my thought, man. No? Well, optimal doesn't mean, you know, supra. Optimal doesn't mean, like, I'm benching my max. I think optimal means I just feel good, you know, like my quality of life is decent and, you know, I'm
well, okay, let me ask you a question. Prior to, maybe a little bit difficult for you to answer this one, but prior to your steroid usage, did you feel at your best?
No, but I think that, and I can't prove it because I didn't test my levels before I started, but I think I had low tests. I'm pretty sure I did. And I think that because I went on to TRT, I have felt markedly improved. Like, you know, obviously I cycled on and off a lot, but like the last 2 years, for instance, I hadn't. And I'd felt like just better, quality of life, good, you know, improved.
Yeah, but what have you checked your levels to see where you're tracking from peak to trough?
No, but I had known where my levels were on average.
So the thing is, when you do a spot test, you only test your levels at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you test at the back end towards your half-life or the period of time that the drug you've taken is active in your system, your levels are going to be lower.
Sure.
You might read that. So for argument's sake, I do a shot on Monday, I test on Sunday, and my blood level's 28.
Yeah.
And more, right? So we're going to go into English now. I'm not going to talk American.
Okay.
So I'm top end of range, and I feel brand new. I feel brilliant. Well, of course I feel brilliant. I've been 30-odd all fucking week.
Yeah.
That ain't natural. That's above natural. And this is where, if you're being truly honest about TRT, you're supposed to replicate natural levels, which means you're not going much above 22.
I don't know what 22 and means, nobody, but we'll say
22,
12. Would that 22 be like, NMOL. Would that be like 1,200 or something? Or?
What's top end?
It depends on the range, but NGDL. There's 1,200 in some labs and 10 in like 1,000 in some labs.
And what's bottom end?
Like 300.
So we'd be talking about 700.
Okay. Which, yeah, that so would be awesome, man.
That's where true TRT should sit, around the 700 mark.
And so this guy's at like 400.
Yeah, so he's low. But like I say, it depends on when he tested in relationship to when he took the injection.
So if it was right before...
So it might just be a case of he needs to change the injection frequency. It might be a case that he needs to go up to 125 mg a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But what you find with a lot of TRT is people run top end of range.
Mm.
So yes, they're going to feel better because they're actually running at an unnatural level. When you look at people's natural hormone levels, nobody runs naturally top end of range unless they've got a genetic anomaly.
Yeah. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that, man. You know, as long as, like,
no,
as long as you're healthy, you know, it's like, as long as you're not screwing yourself up long term, you know.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying that isn't really where your natural test levels sit. So by running TRT at high end, you're not running natural levels. You're running elevated levels.
Fair. Yeah, absolutely. I can see that.
Once you start getting above range, that's when you start to see increases in RBC and you start to see increases in cholesterol adulteration. And so if your week is half above range and half below range because of the ester you're running,
yeah,
then you're going to start to see issues, which is why you start to see more and more TRT patients having to run estrogen control.
Mm, yeah.
Because they're spending too much of time at the top end or above range. If you run your hormones truly within your natural range, you won't need estrogen control because why would estrogen be elevated?
Yeah.
And so you can tell a lot by a TRT protocol by if they're needing estrogen control. There are exceptions to that, definitely. But in general, if you behave yourself with your hormones,
yeah.
I mean, the most ideal way would be injecting every day.
Okay.
And replicating the peaks and troughs that you get from your natural levels.
Yeah.
But obviously that's not practical and it's difficult for people to do. And there's a much higher increased risk of infection if you're breaking the skin every day, however good your injection technique is.
Mm.
So with this gentleman, first thing would be to find out dose and then when test was done. Do the testing 48 hours after and prior to next injection. That will give us our range of decay with the drugs. And then we can look at, okay, so move to a weekly protocol, potentially up to 125 mg, and then you should be more about where you need to be. That isn't necessarily going to mean he's going to feel amazing. Not everybody does. Lots of people on TRT don't feel amazing. They just feel extra shit when they don't do it.
Yeah.
I don't feel anything special off my TRT at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I feel like everyone else does, normal. But I don't feel charged in any way.
Ooh, we have a question here. This might kind of, I wonder if this will be answered basically off of the stuff you've already said, because this is very related TRT-wise. He says, when taking a TRT at 200 milligrams one time a week instead of 100 milligrams twice a week, would you take ADEX just once a week instead of splitting the dose into two times a week? My doctor wants me to take 200 milligrams of test and 1 milligrams of Arimidex and HCG same day Then HCG again 3 days later. So he sounds like maybe that doesn't answer the question, but it sounds like maybe he's using more than he needs to if he's got to have the milligram of Arimidex, huh?
And yeah, well, that would be my argument is, you know, why are you on 200 milligram a test a week for TRT?
Is that too high, you think?
I think if a week, yeah, I think it's too high. But I obviously, bloods will bear that out. I mean, I do know and I have met people that metabolize steroids particularly quickly.
Yeah.
And they are needing higher doses to maintain.
Okay.
But for most people, a dose of 150 milligrams is going to peak your bloods in UK term, in American terminology, at about 1500.
That'd be high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to peak your bloods at. And that's 150 mg.
Huh.
So, you know, it's about seeing how your body handles the drugs you're taking.
Yeah.
But the danger is, you know, people say, oh, well, I want to run it. They start. And just like the original OP was saying, you know, I don't really feel that different. And they've built it up that they were going to feel better when they took the TRT. And they don't. They don't feel that much different. Mm. So they're back to the doctor. I still feel like shit. They put pressure on the doctor to increase the dose. So the doctor gives them a higher dose. There is a lot of pressure from the FDA in the States that doctors stop doing this.
Yeah.
The doctor gives them a higher dose. Now I feel good. Well, of course you feel good because you're way out of range.
Yeah.
Oh, but now I've got problems with estrogen. So now I have to take something to control estrogen. So unfortunately, as a society, as people, we don't like to feel crap, especially when there is a way of avoiding that.
Yeah.
So if there is the option, many will argue, well, if the option's there, why can't I do it? And, well, no, why can't you? That's your choice. But at the same time, the more you run the higher end of range, the more you're going to need to manage your drug usage.
Mm. And like you said, too, other things could come up, red blood thickness, stuff like that.
Yeah, and then you have to start looking at, you know, it might only be once every 6 months, but you have to let blood every 6 months.
Hmm.
So there's all sorts of little things that will build on. When you start pushing top end or above range, even in the effort to be TRT, because you're basing it on how you feel. And the thing is, there are so many factors that influence the way we feel.
Yeah,
it's not just all hormone, you know. Yeah, hormones play a massive role in the way we feel, but so does sunlight, so does our thyroid, so does our sleep, so does our diet.
Mm.
And you're only replacing one element of your hormone production. You're not replacing DHEA.
Yeah.
You're not generally, okay, there is more of a trend towards HCG now, but plenty of people TRT without HCG.
Sure.
So there's an whole plethora of hormones that we produce that aren't being produced by just supplementing with testosterone.
I like the direction you took this. It was not, I didn't expect it. I like it.
So it's TRT is not as simple as people like to make out. And as soon as you start pushing beyond, then it becomes a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
I would all, you know, if you can work under a doctor, work under a doctor. So going back to the OP about using this online source.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't, because he's then going to have to rely on his online source for his testing, for his management. And I've always been very suspicious of anyone who provides a service that then sells the elements for that service.
That's a good point.
I've just had to rework somebody's blood results that are a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
And he was working with a...
Bless you.
He was working with a health... Thank you. It's coronavirus. He was working with a health coach.
Okay.
And the health coach wasn't charging him, but the health coach was recommending his products.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So he had him on a shitload of stuff, most of which was ineffective. One that was actually doing him more harm than good.
Ah, jeez.
And it's like, you know, well, he never charged me. Well, we didn't need to, did he?
No, because
he was making a fucking fortune, yeah. Right. And so, you know, I've always been, it's one of the reasons why I've stayed out of supply when I've advised people of drugs. You know, part of part of what I do is I write drug protocols for people. Yes, I do. I manage their drug usage. And I'll often get asked, you know, oh, I can't find this. Can you help me find it?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just the legality element of it because of what other work I do. It's also the fact that, no, that puts me in a hugely compromised position when it comes to integrity.
Yeah.
You know, every drug dealer in the world tells you you need this drug, that drug, the other drug.
Sure.
You know, you don't go to a car salesman and he doesn't say, oh, no, you don't need to go buy a car, mate, catch a bus. Yeah, so I'd be very, very wary of these private advice clinics that suggest they manage TRT. The one that we were particularly talking about was the OP. I don't know if you want to mention that or not.
No, we don't want to.
Okay. It was shit anyway.
Oh, I've got an off-topic question here. We'll get to that one in a minute. Last real question. When I say real question, last actual question here for drugs and stuff. You ever hear of Kisspeptin?
No, can't say I have.
Yeah, I hadn't either. I just did.
Rings a bell.
So, I guess it can be found in chocolate. It was discovered in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Let me look it back up here. It is a protein peptide, formerly known as medistin. Medistin. Yeah. That's a funny word, medistin. Like, I'm feeling sick. I got to go pick up some medicine.
Oh, God.
It is, encoded by the KIS1 gene in humans. It is a G protein couple. Let's see. But I guess, let's see. The question was.
It's a GnRH agonist.
Yeah, it's. Now, Victoria had said some stuff. She was familiar with it in females. The question we had was, let's see. He didn't really have a question. He says, a friend of mine asked me about this. It says it was developed in Hershey, Pennsylvania, home of the Hershey Kiss. This peptide increases testosterone for men with hypogonadalism. In men who lose testosterone from aging. Works by increasing the pulse frequency and pulse size of LH. Testosterone levels may rise 100 to 250 points. Kisspeptin 10 has also been shown to be better than HCG for increasing testicular size. There is no feedback inhibition, meaning that you're not going to get desensitized to it.
No, because it doesn't work directly on the lady cells. It works on the hypothalamus.
Huh. Okay.
It's from what, hang on, if I'm reading this right, role initiating secretion of GnRH.
Okay.
So this would trigger increase in GnRH, which in turn would increase in FSH and LH.
Hmm.
So it doesn't look like it has a direct action from what I'm seeing here.
Okay.
On the Leydig cells, it works via the hypothalamus and the pituitary. Okay. Apparently, it has some impact on brain function as well.
Huh.
And there's a study currently being advertised for people to volunteer to to join the study.
No kidding.
Hmm. Yeah,
we'll have to keep an eye out on this stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. That, I like the look of that.
Hmm. Oh, the guy who was on, he's prescribed 200 milligrams a week plus HCG. He says, tested 5 days after 100 milligrams and his level was 399. So basically,
yeah. So that's his lowest level. So what was his highest level?
He doesn't say. He said estrogen was 30. So estrogen was already on the higher end. I don't know what the range was. There's so many different ranges, Dave. It gets so confusing.
So you don't have a standardized range over there, then?
What?
You don't have a standardized range over there.
There's a couple ranges. I've seen estrogen that goes up to 60, estrogen that goes to 30. It's I don't know what to believe here.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. We have one other question here. I think you know what somebody asked this recently. We should ask it again because we didn't get to it. He asked it again. What do you think about the purity of L-carnitine from racehorse websites versus companies like Synthetech or Amino Sites that are selling it?
I haven't got a clue, but I would assume it's actually probably better.
Yeah.
Back in the day when I used to take drugs, you know, I used to actually buy quite a few things from veterinary sites.
Did you really?
Hmm.
Right.
Easy to get, and
all right, we got one.
Because there's no reason for them not to be.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you said you had an off-topic question.
Yes, off-topic. This is from Jeremy Jason. He says, "Who is more celebrated in the UK, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, or Led Zeppelin?"
Ooh, fucking hell.
I imagine it probably depends on the crowd you hang out with.
Yeah, I would suspect that AC/DC are a little more broad spectrum.
Okay.
So they've probably impacted more non-rock people than Black Sabbath or Led Zeppelin have.
Okay.
Particularly more modern times, because AC/DC have had some, you know, sort of media exposure in more recent years. Black Sabbath out of the three would be the harder of the rock bands, so more probably favored within the true rock fans.
Yeah.
And obviously Led Zeppelin, they have probably a bigger catalog of iconic songs. I don't listen to Led Zeppelin, but I am aware of their songs because they are classics and they are regarded as classics.
Yeah.
AC/DC, I know because they've sort of crossed over a little bit more.
Yeah.
So they've had more commercial success outside of the rock genre. And then Black Sabbath are probably the purest of the three when it comes to the rock culture, I would say personally. But fuck, what do I know? I'm a drum and bass fan.
Yeah.
I know probably more about AC/DC, well, as in I'm more familiar with AC/DC than probably I am the other two groups, to be honest.
Now, I wonder which band has been used more at amateur bodybuilding shows. I think AC/DC is right at the top of that, but then people have done so many posing routines to Iron Man from Black Sabbath, too. I think it's a toss-up.
Fucking Transformers and God, bloody... There was a time, I'm trying to think what it was and all. Gladiator theme tune and fucking Highlander.
Oh, jeez.
Jesus Christ. It's like every third athlete on stage was using that music at one point.
Yeah.
But Dorian did an Olympia shot to Highlander, didn't he? Or a Knight of the Champions pose to Highlander.
Oh, there you go.
To the Queen, there can be only one. He posed to one of them at one of the shows. Must admit, that was one of the best posing routines I've seen at the time.
There's a lot of good music that came out of the UK. Of course, you're not far from Liverpool, right, Dave? Because you're in the north there. So that's where
I'm not too far from Liverpool.
Are the Beatles still highly celebrated over there?
I suppose so. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, and this is something that you find in football as well, quite strangely, in that most Manchester United fans aren't in England.
Really? Huh. Okay.
They have more international fans than they do domestic fans. If you're from Manchester, you support Manchester City.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
So Man U is a very international football team. It's not really as strong as supported only as it is with its international fans.
Ooh.
And that's sort of similar with the Beatles. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the Beatles are, you know, an iconic band of their era. They're not my cup of tea, but and very well celebrated. But you tend to get more foreign people coming to Liverpool to see the birth of the Beatles than you do English people going to Liverpool to see the birth of the Beatles.
I could see that. I thought of another off-topic question for you. Can you talk about soccer hooligans? Because I've heard stories.
No.
Now, people told me, like in the UK, there's bars that you can't go into wearing like tennis shoes and track pants and stuff because you're thought of as being a, like here, you just, I don't know. It just, it's a,
no,
it's
that's
a thing.
That's not quite true. Historically, you wouldn't get into a town center bar, particularly on a Friday and Saturday night, unless you were wearing shoes, trousers, and a shirt.
Yeah, you can't wear tennis shoes, right?
No, and well, as time's gone on, that's become more and more lax.
Okay.
So there are still venues that run a dress code. Most venues now will not allow what would be effectively gym wear.
Okay.
So they won't allow tracksuit bottoms. They won't allow that sort of clothing. But they're happy with trainers, with sneakers.
Oh, yeah.
As long as they're decent quality ones.
Really? Like they got to be like Air Jordans? Yeah. You mean they got to be good shoes or?
Well, no, they've just got to be, you know, not a pair of shittened up, bust out toes, fucking rag things.
I see.
And it's more about creating a certain level of class within the venue. You know, there was a period of time where a lot of venues were still running shoes only and new upcoming venues because people stopped wearing shoes to go out. They started wearing it. And the argument was, well, his shoes cost £20.
Yeah.
My trainers cost me £200.
Yeah.
So who out of the two of us actually has the more money to spend?
Huh.
And so bars slowly and surely started to allow more casual footwear and more casual clothing in. But with regards to football hooliganism, that actually, I suppose in a way, really is a gang culture in its own right.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of hooligan organizations associated with football teams that don't really actually ever go to the matches.
Really?
And it's well, the vast majority of them are banned anyway, but it's very orchestrated. So they will, for argument's sake, be playing a team.
Yeah.
So they will contact the hooligans in that team and they will arrange for a venue, a street address or a parking lot or wherever it be to meet up and beat the living shit out of each other.
Holy shit.
And it is that structured. And, you know, there's certain pubs that will support away fans in the local vicinity and the basically only the away fans go into that pub, none of the home fans go in that pub.
Wow.
And vice versa. And won't be tied if you stumble into the wrong one.
Huh.
And police manage it that way. So, you know, most cities or towns that have an active football hooligan element to their football team will speak to the pubs and say, you know, you accept home fans, you're only accepting away fans. And they stick to them quite religiously. And the police that on the outside to make sure that none of the opposing fans are becoming in that area.
Wow.
But the football hooliganism was at its peak. I wouldn't say it's at its peak anymore. Was very well organized and very structured and had quite a hierarchy and sort of, you know, with I suppose sort of a military terminology really, in the sense that they were people that commanded operations and then there were lesser individuals that would I suppose be sergeants and then you had your foot soldiers, so to speak.
But
the violence was organized. It was orchestrated. It wasn't random. It happened randomly as well.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't without its random occurrences, but it was orchestrated. I remember years and years ago, I think it was a Turkish team played Leeds. They came to Leeds and a Leeds fan, or something happened and a Leeds fan got injured. And when they next played again, Leeds went, I mean, Leeds trashed every Turkish kebab house in Leeds that night.
Oh, my God.
They just went on the warpath.
So have you seen those guys ever walking around? You ever see like, hey, there's a bunch of hooligans over there?
Yeah, yeah. I remember years ago working at a club on Clacton Pier.
Oh, because you used to bounce, right?
Yeah, yeah, and Millwall were well known for having a very, very violent following.
Okay.
Millwall fans, renowned for being nasty bastards.
I don't even know. That's a team, I take it.
Yeah, the Millwall's a team, football team. And the fucking police diverted this coach down to the club.
Okay.
Now, get to Clacton Pier, you literally go over a road bridge onto the pier, and then there's a big parking area out the front of the actual promenade.
Yeah.
And the promenade's old building, it's all glass fronted, so it's closed off, you can't just get on it. So the coach has pulled up, police have shut the road at the top so the coach can't get back out, and the Millwall fans have piled out of the bus and just set to with the doorman, because that's what they turned up for. They turned up for a brawl.
Oh my gosh.
And we were just smashing 10 bowls of shit out of each other for quite a while until there were enough sort of unconscious bodies on the floor. Then the police came down, picked them up, and sent them on the way. But I used to do a lot of security work in a neighbouring town called Bradford. Now, Bradford have never had a particularly successful football team.
Okay.
But they had an incredibly successful hooligan organisation.
Oh my
so
God.
Their football team was third division.
Okay.
But their hooligans were first division.
Wow.
So that was quite Bradford Ointment, they were called. And they have their own, I mean, I'm so out of touch now, I don't remember a lot of them.
Bradford what?
But they Bradford Ointment.
Bradford Ointment.
Yeah, they all had, the football hooligan gangs had names.
Ointment. That's their name.
Ointment.
What is that even supposed to mean? Like, I think of ointment, and I think of, like, something an old lady's putting on her elbows or something.
Yeah, I have no idea where the name came from. But they've all had names. Huddersfield Town, my hometown, they had the Huddersfield Young Casuals, and they had the Under Threes. They've had a few football hooligan gangs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, everyone tends to have its own organisation, and they were very, very structured back in the day. I don't think it's as such a major feature as it used to be. But when you start getting into some of the European teams were naughty.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
Well, they were turning up with weapons.
Oh. So the guys locally, they were fist fights.
Generally speaking, it would be physical. You might get bottles. You might get stuff like that. As time's gone on, you've seen more of an increase in weapon usage as social constructs have sort of fallen to pieces. And, you know, even back in the day, there was an element of a code of conduct almost.
Okay.
So, there were certain things you did and certain things you didn't do. That's as time's gone on, that's sort of gone out of the window. There's some of the overseas teams are particularly, there's some good YouTube documentaries on the subject, actually.
I imagine. Yeah. It's something I've never seen in person, obviously. I just remember somebody told me they were in Ireland and you couldn't wear, and this is a decade plus ago, 15 years ago now. And she had said you couldn't wear tennis shoes into the bars, into the pubs. Like you weren't allowed to.
No, that was quite. Yeah.
Huh.
That's quite common.
That's crazy, man. All right. Well, listen, let's get out of here. We've got some good content out, some good education. We have some more, so we'll get to anything we missed. We'll get to on the next show, guys. Go to crosslands.org.uk. Check out everything that Dave is doing. He's got his botany over there, plus, of course, his coaching, everything else. Dave, anything else I should mention or plug that's going on right now?
No, I'm good, mate. Good. Just plodding away.
And, of course, go to truenutrition.com. Use our code ADVICES. And guys, we'll catch you next time.